This is an interview with Margaret Starbuck at her home for Youngstown State University Early Education Project by Caroline Wilms Hall on May 31st at 10 a.m. All right, Margaret, would you tell us something about your parents and your family life as you were growing up?
My parents both grew up in eastern Pennsylvania. They were of Pennsylvania German stock. Both families believed in education. My father worked very hard to get his college degree at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. My mother was musical from the time she was playing organ in church at 11 years old. Her father was a pastor of a church. And by the time she was 16, her parents were sending her to Baltimore one day a week for lessons at the Peabody Institute of Music. She graduated from the Peabody Institute of Music at 18, ready to teach piano. Both parents were interested in our having college educations, and so after they had lived their first years of married life in McKeesport, Pennsylvania, they moved to Cleveland, where my father was a teacher. They wanted us to live in a town where we could get a good education. My father taught until he was 70 in Cleveland public schools. When the Depression hit, he had his master's degree and he had reached his seniority, the highest salary he could reach in Cleveland, which was $3,600. The Depression hit and he was cut back to $2,400, but we still went on through our college years. We were, of course, much more lucky than our neighbors. We were living in an area where many were steel mill workers, and they were just completely out of jobs, so we were really fortunate.
Mm-hmm. How many children were in your family?
We had four children. My brother, the oldest, went to Case School of Applied Science, and he graduated there during the Depression. Then my sister is next, and she went to the School of Education at Western Reserve and was going there when I graduated from high school in 34. So I waited a year to go to college so there wouldn't be two of us in college at the same time. I might talk a little bit about the public school education in Cleveland. I felt, looking back on it, I feel it was a very outstanding education. We had many opportunities that I have seen just developing in recent years in other areas. In our elementary school, of course, we went home. Nobody stayed at school. Nobody was bused. They all went home for lunch, and they all went home right after school walking. So we were able to stay after school to rehearse things. The teachers kept us after school to practice different programs, which can't be done today very well. But we put on so many different interesting programs that I recall. And every class in the building put on a play for Christmas. So it was a very long program every Christmas time. Also, there were so many organized things with the whole city. We had a very good dance program through the whole city. And from the time I was in kindergarten, there were groups of children sent from every grade, from every school in the city, down to the public auditorium. And we put on dances. Every first grade learned the same dance, and the floor of the public auditorium, which is a huge floor, would be covered with first graders doing the same dance at the same time. And each grade put on a different dance. So I was introduced to English country dancing and folk dances of Europe through this program, which was carried on all through the year in school. I didn't go down every year because just a certain team would be chosen, but I did get down to the public auditorium several times during my 7 years in elementary school, and that was a big thrill. There were also opportunities from the time we were in fourth grade to go to the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra concerts. They put on special ones for children, and there was great preparation done beforehand. There were books published, pamphlets published, I should say, which we studied in our classrooms. There would be themes, like I remember a Scandinavian concert, and I remember an Italian concert, and then we would have certain composers' concerts. So that from the time I was in fourth grade, I went to a symphony concert every year. And when we got into junior high, I think they were twice a year, and perhaps in high school they were twice a year also. But we studied the music beforehand and enjoyed the concerts more because we had an opportunity to hear the music and learn the background of the composer and the music. We also had big field days at our school. That was a big event with parading and athletic events and dancing out in the schoolyard toward the end of the year. And I marvel now at all the preparation those teachers must have done to get everything working so well. In our elementary school, as I look back now, I remember we had a girls' entrance and a boys' entrance. We played on our own sides of the playground. We didn't play together at that time. And I guess we had more peace that way. In our back schoolyard, there was a portable building, we called it. It was a wooden building, pretty good size, where there were several rooms in it. And I was not too conscious of it, of what was going on there at the time, but I realize now that there were handicapped children there, perhaps mentally handicapped and physically handicapped children, who were getting special kinds of education. And I remember the crafts things that they made, and they would have a sale every so often. And I remember some Christmases when we were allowed to spend money there and bought toys and baskets, which they made. And some of those things are still in our family, mm-hmm. those children had made. Mm-hmm. So I think that Cleveland was quite far advanced in many ways. In junior high, I started French, and with a Dr. Desauzay, who was the head of the foreign language department in Cleveland, he had very, what I'd call now, modern ideas about teaching languages. We were not allowed to speak English at all in our classroom. The teacher had to be able to demonstrate with pictures, charts, and just her way of speaking what she was trying to get across, and we had to answer in French. When I got into German in high school, we did the same thing. And I've found since that there are many places that consider this very modern, that you don't speak English in a foreign language class. All through high school, we did, I think, very special things too. We had interesting things going on, and I was in a high school where there were many of the old-fashioned ideas. Latin was taught, and we were very well disciplined. We had a man and a woman who were assistant principals, and they were almost like deans of the high school, who looked after us. I remember we were just beginning to wear ankle socks in high school days, and I remember some girls being called into the assistant principal's office, told that that was not a proper thing to do, to wear ankle socks to school. We should wear stockings. You can just imagine things like that happening nowadays. Mm-hmm. Well, when I graduated, we were in the midst of the deep part of the Depression. We had abandoned the annual book, which was a big part of high school at that time. Very few people bought class rings. And at our commencement, we weren't wearing gowns. The girls wore white dresses and the boys wore suits. And the girls had always had corsages. That was a part of the outfit. But because of the Depression, the corsages were eliminated that year, I remember. I had started working in a doctor's office. Excuse me, this doctor was a friend of ours, and he had need of a an assistant very suddenly, and he'd called my mother, and she called me while I was at school and told me to go over to the doctor's office, which was not far from the high school. That afternoon, I had a schedule at that time when I was a junior when I could leave fairly early in the afternoon. So I went over to this doctor's office as green could be, and started in working for him. It was a real learning experience because I had never done anything of the sort before. For one thing, it was over a restaurant which was of shoddy character, and I found cockroaches all over this doctor's office. His assistant hadn't been able to be there for some days. She had become ill. And these cockroaches scared me to death. I'd never encountered them before. I called my mother immediately, and she said, go over to the drugstore and ask them what you should do. So I went over and got powder and started spreading it around. But it was weeks before I'd eliminated them all, and I kept finding dead cockroaches in the drawers of the desk and so forth. Well, I worked at the doctor's office. He was an obstetrician, so I learned a great deal. And I worked there the end of my junior year, all through the senior year. And then, because my sister was still in college, it was decided that I should wait a year to go to college. So I worked for him another year in the afternoons. I got a dollar a day for working in the afternoons from 1 until 5. And then he said I was such a good worker that he gave me an extra dollar. So I got $7 a week instead of $6 a week after a while for working for him.
Now, how could you do this?
They could arrange my schedule at school so that I could leave at 1 o'clock.
What, then you didn't have study periods and things like that?
Not as many. I think they were 45-minute periods, and we started pretty early in the morning. I think we started at 8 o'clock. And it was arranged. I had to cut out some of my music, the glee club that I belonged to. I had to cut that out, I remember. And and I couldn't belong to clubs, which I had done before, which met after school. I couldn't do those things. But they could arrange it that I could get out at 1 o'clock.
What time did school get out?
Well, there were 9 periods, and I think that was about 3:30 when the 9th period was over. And we didn't have buses, so it wasn't nearly as structured as it has to be now. Mm-hmm. But we could get out. I think I was there through the 7th period, perhaps, and then went to the doctor's office. Mm-hmm. So I could get all my required work in before.
Well, then,
that.
Did everyone go home for lunch?
No, not at high school. We had 45-minute periods, three lunch periods. They were staggered.
Mm-hmm.
But you got a lunch period worked into your worked into your schedule.
So lunch was provided then?
There was a cafeteria, but we could carry our lunches, and that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
We carried our lunches, usually.
What was the name of the elementary school that you attended?
East Denison. East Denison Elementary School, which they are now talking about eliminating. I think they're perhaps going to get rid of that school.
How large building was it?
Well, I think perhaps there were 2 rooms for each grade, I believe, and a kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to kindergarten?
Yes, I did go to kindergarten. My brother and sister did not, but we had just come to Cleveland. They had already started school before we came to Cleveland, and they hadn't had an opportunity to go to kindergarten. But I went to kindergarten, and I felt it was a very good preparation. We learned a lot of skills with our hands, for instance, I remember in kindergarten, that are things that children in perception do nowadays. We learned we were to copy certain patterns of stringing beads, I remember. There were different shapes of beads and different colors of beads, and they would tell you, they would show you what to do, or then they would tell you what to do, and we had to do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember another thing we did was weaving patterns. There was a kind of a heavy bogus paper which was stripped, or had strips cut. I don't know how to say it, but anyhow, you could weave through it. There was a margin around that wasn't cut,
mm-hmm.
and then there were these stripes cut in it. It was paper that was bought that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had very pretty colored shiny paper to weave in and out, and we were shown different patterns, like over two, under two, and then alternating, like over two, under two, and then over one, under one for the next one. And there were all sorts of different weaving patterns that we did,
mm-hmm.
that we were to be able to follow directions, both visual and oral directions in those. I kept those for a long time. They've made them into a book for us, and I kept them for many years. I would love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did many creative things in our kindergarten, too, and they always had an assistant, which was, to me, very important. I can't understand how kindergarten teachers can handle everything they have to handle in the system where we are now, because they have no assistant. But the one assistant would be working with children at the table, working on quite specific things, and the other teacher would be working in a circle or with balls and various things of that sort at the same time,
mm-hmm.
so that you could get much more specific thing done, I think, with a small group of children, which I thought was a big advantage.
Did you have small classes?
No, they weren't very small. And in elementary school, I'm sure that in every room we had two divisions. They had maybe not until we got to fourth grade. We had entry in September and also in January, so that you could enter school two different times, and then they have graduation two different times. So that we had an A division and a B division in each grade. And I think that when I started first grade, I'm quite sure that was a solid group of beginners. But by the time we got to the fourth grade, we had like A's and B's in the same class. And then the teachers would work with one half the class with one specific thing, and then the other half would be studying, doing something from the board or something of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was worked.
Do you remember that there were a lot of materials provided for you by the school? Did you have to buy your own books,
paper? We had to buy
our
own art paper. I remember we must have had very limited artwork, because we bought one tablet of Bogus and one tablet of Manila, if you know what those things are,
mm-hmm.
and a package of assorted colored papers, our own crayons, our own paints, our own tablets, our spelling pads, and a notebook, and a Webster notebook, as it was called. We had to provide our own writing paper and our own pencils, scissors. So those things were all we had to provide, but the textbooks were furnished in elementary school, as I recall. When we got to high school, we had to buy our own textbooks at that time. They moved over into furnishing textbooks later, but we had to, when I started high school, we had to buy our own textbooks. And we bought secondhand textbooks a great deal. They had a place there in the school where you could buy secondhand textbooks.
Well, you had older, brother and sister?
Mm-hmm. So we could pass the books
down,
too.
In your family.
Yes.
They were close enough that you could.
Yes. Most textbooks could be passed down.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now,
what was the name of the junior high school?
I went to Thomas Jefferson Junior High, and that was an unusual school. It was just a new school at that time. There were 7th and 8th grade classes in the elementary school where I went, but they were experimenting with special, they called it enrichment classes in junior high, and they wanted my parents to send me to this enrichment class. My older sister had gone there too. And there they had everybody grouped by ability, I expect it was, but they were in, there was the enrichment class, and then there was like 7-1, 7-2, 7-3, all the way down to about 12, I think. And there were various classes. And I'm afraid it got to be a kind of snobbish affair. It was not as happy an atmosphere as it should have been, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the enrichment classes were expected to do special things, and they had a very good program. They had very good drama, I know, in the junior high and so forth. Somehow or other, I was not as happy there as I was later in the high school. I think I was perhaps a person that liked to be more structured. They would give us projects to do and let you go on your own, and I don't think I used my time very well, and I don't think I enjoyed that as much as I did when I got to high school. Everything was much more structured, and I enjoyed it more. I got better grades in high school, too, than I did in junior high.
Well, would you compare that enrichment class you had to the idea that they're trying to develop for gifted children now?
I think it is. It's the same thing. They were trying to do more things. I know our social studies class, for instance, they gave us a syllabus at the beginning of the year, and our teacher told us how many projects we were expected to do. We were to delve into material ourselves and work out something that was visual. I remember building a model of the Cleveland Airport, for instance. And I forgot what else we did. I did, but things like that. But we spent a great deal of the time on our own in that classroom, supposedly working out things, and then we'd go to the teacher and make our reports. But as I recall, we did a lot of fooling around, and I didn't enjoy that very much. I didn't care for that type of education.
Did you change classes there?
Yes, we did. In junior high, we moved from one class to another all the way through. We also had a creative writing class, and I don't think I'm a creative writer. That was agony for me, too, to sit there that whole year and try to create something, and I didn't do very well at all with that. But we were introduced to some poets in that class, too. The teacher read to us from various poets. But I'm just not that kind of a person, I guess. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy that particularly. Mm-hmm.
Then you moved on to high school where?
I went to Lincoln High School in Cleveland. And as I said, I enjoyed that very much. I started there in ninth grade. The junior high went through ninth grade, but my father was not content with what I was doing, and he thought I'd better get into high school. So I moved over into high school in ninth grade. They had a junior high at the high school also. And I just enjoyed it very much at high school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a big old-fashioned school, and as I said, it was based on many of the old classical types of teaching. But we had very thorough Latin teaching, which I enjoyed. I took 4 years of Latin, and I had 2 years of German. And I felt as though it was a good education that I got there. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember of your elementary, junior high, high school teachers? Were they male, female, predominantly?
Entirely female in elementary. And the principals were also female, I think, entirely, probably in the city. I think that was the pattern, female principals in elementary schools. And I think hardly ever did a man teach in elementary school at that time. I think there was a man out in this special education building behind our building, as I recall. There were some quite large boys out there, and I think it was good to have a man there to help with them, their physical development and so forth. In junior high, it was very much mixed. We had both men and women, and the principal was a man, and the assistant principal was a woman. I didn't have much respect for that man. I felt that a lot of his ideas were not particularly good. He was there because he was an innovator. He was pushing things along, but I was kind of a conservative child, I think, and I didn't like some of the things he did. Mm-hmm. We had assemblies regularly in the junior high, which were quite outstanding. We had speakers from a lot of different places coming to the junior high and different types of things. I think some drama groups came and put on things. And as I said, they had a very good drama program there, too, and they put on very good plays. I didn't go into the drama program. I wasn't that much interested in it. They had also noon movies. We ate our lunch. They had a 45-minute period, I think, and you ate your lunch at the beginning of the period and then went down to the auditorium, and they showed a movie they showed two reels, like for 15 minutes, I think it was. And we paid, a few cents, maybe 1 or 2 cents to go into the movie. You could go to the library if you didn't want to, or you could go out on the playground if you didn't want to go to the movie. But that was the most movies I'd ever seen. We didn't go to movies much in my childhood. We just weren't a movie-going family. Mm-hmm. So I got introduced to lots of movies that way. We would see a whole movie in a week, and then usually have cartoons or a Laurel and Hardy short one on Friday. Mm-hmm. That's the way it worked out.
So you went to a fairly large high school?
Yes. I think there were,
It was a large high school. I think there were something like 350 students in my graduating class. But it was junior high and high school. And of course, it was depression, and a lot of children dropped out. They didn't stay in to graduate. It was too expensive to stay in school. If they could get anything to do, they did.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a senior, the what would be called now, I think, the merit scholarships tests were just beginning. And I remember going quite a few Saturday mornings to meet with our assistant principal, and she helped us. She went through various kinds of tests and exposed us to a lot of ideas that we wouldn't have had before to prepare us to take these tests. So I learned a lot about literature. She had us reading various kinds of literature and doing all sorts of things to help us to pass these tests. Well, we took some tests down at the Cleveland College in the center of town, and then we went to Kent, I remember, for our district tests. And Kent at that time, the university, was just a college, I think, really. It was mostly teacher preparatory. It was pretty much a normal school at that time, I think, and it was just a horseshoe of buildings. It has changed so drastically, you can hardly believe it. But I took those tests, and on the basis of those tests, then I got several offers of scholarships for colleges. But my father said we couldn't afford to go out of town, and I think he was right. And I thought I surely had to go to our church college, which was Heidelberg College in Tiffin. Other members of our church had gone, and I had heard the wonderful things they did, and I thought I just couldn't live if I didn't have dormitory life. But my father said no, so that was it. I got some good offers of scholarship there and of working and so forth, but we didn't pursue it farther. Our Board of Education in Cleveland, did you have any more questions about high school?
I was just going to ask, what area of Cleveland was this in?
It's on the west side of the river, not very far from the Cuyahoga Valley. And Lincoln High School was probably about 2 miles south of the public square. And I lived another 2 miles south. I walked to school lots of times. I didn't have to walk, but I liked to walk, and I walked home a great deal of the time, too. But we did have special student streetcar fare. We could buy student passes, or you could buy special tickets that were reduced for students to ride, so that we didn't have bus systems, mm-hmm. school bus systems at all, but the youngsters could ride on streetcars if they needed to get to school. And that was a big help. As I remember, the adult tickets, streetcar tickets at that time, were about 7.5 cents a piece. So student tickets were less than that. They weren't very much.
Mm-hmm.
And we could transfer for a penny, transfer onto another streetcar line for a penny. The junior high school I went to was farther away from my home. That was at least 3 miles from home, maybe more. It was quite a distance. And I could go by streetcar. My father often took me and then would go on to his school from there to save money.
Mm-hmm.
Drive.
Mm-hmm. But it was safe to walk.
Oh, yes.
It's
still safe to walk in that area of Cleveland. People have lots of misconceptions, I think, about Cleveland. I felt it was a wonderful city to grow up in. There are parts of Cleveland that I wouldn't walk in now, I'm sure. But I would walk. I wouldn't hesitate to walk in that area where I grew up now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more question about your teachers. You say they were all female in elementary.
Yes.
Were they all single?
Not quite. I remember one whose husband was an invalid or semi-invalid. And, I know that I had teachers who got married and stayed. Well, maybe they didn't stay in the system right then. But some of them came back to the system later, I know. And I don't know how that worked out. But I know that it was not, I don't know if there's anything in the contract saying they couldn't get married. But it was not encouraged, I'm quite sure. And they didn't, I think at that time, they didn't want to employ two people of the same family in the school system. They wanted to spread the jobs around, like a husband and wife. Maybe it was done occasionally, but I don't think very often that the husband and wife would be in the same school system. Mm-hmm. In Cleveland, I should say. And they were supposed to live in Cleveland if they taught in Cleveland. I remember that, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you went on to college. Were you expected to become a teacher by your parents?
Yes, my parents expected me to. I didn't want to, particularly. The doctor that I worked for said I should be a nurse. He thought I picked up things so easily and so well that I should be a nurse, but I said no, I didn't want to be a nurse. That was something I just didn't care about at all. My father said we had to prepare for something, and school teaching seemed to be the most obvious thing. And I think it was a wise thing to say we had to prepare for something. Mm-hmm. So my sister, my older sister, was prepared to be a teacher, and my younger sister, who is much more of an individual than I, asserted her individuality more, perhaps I should say, vacillated greatly about being a school teacher. She ended up being an elementary school teacher, but she didn't want to be very badly. So she vacillated in her college class between taking a home economics class at Reserve and finally ended up in the School of Education and finished there. But yes, it was understood that we were to prepare for something. And that seemed to be the obvious thing to do.
Was that the best occupation for a female at that time?
I suppose so. I suppose as far as financial returns, you mean?
No.
Or
was
status?
Was it considered socially more acceptable than other things you could prepare for?
Well, I think nursing was socially acceptable, but I don't think nurses got as much salary income as at that time as teachers. Perhaps they don't even yet. And, the only other thing would probably be clerical work. And that wasn't, I wasn't inclined that way at all. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think people were looked down upon when they did clerical work. I really wasn't conscious of people looking down on anyone. You did what you could do,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you went to Western Reserve then?
So then I got a scholarship at Western Reserve University. At that time when I started college, the Cleveland Board of Education helped to support the School of Education at Western Reserve University because they wanted to have a good pool of teachers coming along. And so they gave, I think, half support to the School of Education, and they also provided scholarships on the basis of tests for people that wanted to take them. And I got one of those scholarships. Now the tuition, I have a bill right here, the tuition for one semester was $150, and they gave us $100 for one semester. So I had to pay $50 plus fees, which amounted to $10. So I paid $60 a semester, I think during my whole college time. Maybe there were some fees for certain classes that were more than that, but that was basically it. I paid $60 a semester for college, mm-hmm. which is unbelievable. But it was very fine. The first year, then, that I was in college, the School of Education was in a public school building. They had the college part of it in a half of the school, and then they were ordinary elementary school in the other half. So that it was called observation school, so that it was a place where we could go to observe very easily, anytime. I mean, we were free to go in and out of that school. We were a very small, I mean, comparatively small school of education, and we were very much a family feeling. We had very much of a family feeling there. We had our own dean right there, and we had some excellent professors. And we were pretty much looked after. I mean, we were seen to it that we were doing what we should do, and they didn't want anybody coming to school with education who wasn't serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't fool around very much.
Where was this?
Now, this was in Cleveland on the, well, it's west of the campus. If you know where Case Campus is, Case has now become a part of Western Reserve, but at that time it was a separate school. It was Case School of Applied Science. And it was up high on a bluff. And we were down below on Stearns Road, just down below that bluff. Donebrook came through and had made the valley. And our school was right down across the highway from this bluff where Case School of Applied Science was.
Mm-hmm.
Doan Brook was open at that time. It's now covered over. But it was a lovely brook, and it was flowing toward the lake. And it was a nice little wild area right there in the midst of all the traffic and everything. And I remember our general science teacher in our freshman year taking us over there and teaching us about the leaves and the flowers and the insects that we saw there in that area. So we learned a lot firsthand right there in the center of the city.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
As you took your first graders out and talked to them about the trees. And
that's right, I did that too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel you should get to know what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
See, have eyes that see. That's what we were taught, and I think that that's very important, that you have some knowledge of what you're looking at and appreciation of what you're looking at right around you.
Mm-hmm. All right, how do we spell Doan?
D-O-A-N.
And then,
oh, did I say that? Yeah, D-O-A.
And then
Donebrook.
You mentioned Stearns Road.
Stearns Road was the road right next to this Donebrook where it runs into Euclid. It's between Carnegie and Euclid was Stearns Road.
Okay, how would it be spelled?
S-T-E-A-R-N-S.
Okay. So you were at this school all 4 years then?
Yes. After my freshman year, the Board of Education withdrew its support. It was feeling the depression very much. And so this School of Education was taken over entirely by Western Reserve. And we were moved out of that building into what had been a very fancy house. I wouldn't know as you called a mansion, but it was a good-sized house on Bellflower Road, which was just opposite of Forestone Mather campus. Now, Forestone Mather was the women's college. Adelbert was the men's college. And we were right opposite Forestone Mather campus. And we then took many courses on the campus, as well as in our own building. The staff was very much cut down, so that there were very few of our own School of Education staff members. But that building was our headquarters still, and we had our own dean, and we felt very much a part of that school. It was very much a social unit. Practically none of our students were dormitory people. We were nearly all day students who went home at night, and so all our structure was for day students.
Mm-hmm.
And we enjoyed each other. I still have a lot of friends that I write to from that school, and I still see some of them that I have enjoyed them all through the years. They were really outstanding people.
We need to turn over the tape. Okay, Margaret, when did you start college? Was that 1934, 35?
I graduated from high school in 34, but I didn't start college till 35. I took a year between.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing you might say there, at that time the Cleveland Public Schools offered postgraduate high school work because so many of the young people had nothing to do. And so they offered them a chance to come back and take some more courses and work as a payment to do something as an assistant to somebody in school. So I went as an assistant to my father at the school where he taught. By that time they had free textbooks, and he was put in charge of the textbooks, which meant charging them in and charging them out. It was a big job. He was also treasurer of the school. He had to handle all the organizations had to put the money through him in order to keep things straight. And so he had a great deal of bookwork to do besides his teaching. And they assigned me to help him. So I was over there in the mornings. I took two classes and then went to my doctor's office in the afternoon. Worked for him for several hours. But that was another interesting experience, and I felt a growing experience, too, that year. I was just as glad I waited a year to go to college. I think it meant more to me than it would have before.
Did these courses that you took as postgraduate courses help you or give you any credit when you went to college then?
No, I had already graduated from high school. It was just high school courses. They didn't give you any credit. But it was just, I took typing and shorthand, which was a help to me. And I took an economics class, I recall, and a physiology class. I got interested in physiology because I had been working for the doctor. I wanted to find out more. And so those were interesting classes. And of course, I didn't keep on with my shorthand, but it was an interesting thing. It was like a different world. The shorthand world was different from anything I'd ever experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, and the typing, of course, helped a lot later on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what kind of courses did you take in the School of Education?
Well, we had great variety of required courses in the first year, as I recall. We had an introduction to education, which I thought was very good. And part of that course, well, we got into the philosophies of education, which I think is important. Different ideas that people had developed through the years in how education should work. And then we started in observing in classrooms in our freshman year. And we would go as a whole class, or at least our professor was with us, maybe not the whole class, but a pretty good size group of us went. And we would have the class set up. We knew what we were going to be observing, what type of teaching we were going to observe. And we had to take very specific notes. And when we got back, we'd discuss them. And we had to tell what the teacher used in visual materials, how she introduced the subject, how she carried it on, you know, and developed it, and what her conclusion was. We had to watch and see all the development of a lesson, which I think was a very good experience, and then we could discuss it. Well, before that year was over, maybe before the first semester was over, we were teaching in those situations ourselves. We would be giving 10-minute or 15-minute lessons, and we were being observed by our own professor and by the classroom teacher and by other classmates. So we did a pretty specific job. Of course, we were helped to prepare for it, too, by our professor. I mean, it was a very well-structured class, I think, where we knew what we were doing, and we had to carry it out carefully and well. So we taught, I think, several short lessons during that first year, our freshman year. And our administrators were very particular and weeded out people so that we did not get to our junior year unless they were pretty sure that we were good teaching material and had done careful work as we were advancing. Well, we had general science, we had art, we had gym, physical education, which directed us toward things that we would teach in elementary school. I think we had an English course, basic English course, for grammar and that type of thing in that freshman year. I can't remember all the things we did have that freshman year. Social studies course, too, I believe, of some sort. But as we advanced, we had educational psych, and we had art and physical ed along the way for teaching of physical ed, teaching mathematics. We also had to take our own mathematics, so we knew how to do. We had to be good mathematicians ourselves. But then we were allowed to take a good many elective courses, too, to enrich. We had to have a major field, and that was not just education. And then I had two minors. I'm not sure whether it was two minors were required or not. But I had a minor. I had a major in social studies, which included history and geography, and teaching of social studies, and economics, and various things like that. And I had German as a minor, and music as a minor. Now, I was never a performing musician, but I sang in groups. I was in the university choir and in glee club, and so got a lot of exposure that way. And I took basic
element, basic music things, theory and sight reading and things like that in the music courses, and history of American music and appreciation of the music. So I got quite a few musical courses in my background. Mayhill Arbuthnot was one of the outstanding people on our staff. She was very well known in the field of children's literature, and she was on our staff the whole time I was at Reserve.
The Arbuthnot anthology?
That's right.
Children's literature?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Well, as I said, we were a very close-knit family, so we got to know our professors well, and they were the kind of people that entertained us, would have us in their homes, or put on special events. We just got to know them well. We had special social events that we would go out to the Science Lodge in a metropolitan park. The whole school would go and have a end-of-the-year gathering there, and we'd have our Christmas gathering there. And we just really had a good time knowing our teachers and each other.
Mm-hmm. How many were in your class when you graduated then from college?
Dear, I don't know. Let's see. Can you estimate how many that is? These were the people that went to Western Reserve, or went to the School of Education. Now, actually, in our commencement, there were many, many more, because they were people who were finishing their degrees who were already teaching. We had to take 4 years of college right away. They weren't giving us, they weren't giving certificates at that time in Cleveland, I mean, for teaching. You couldn't go in and teach unless you had your degree.
If I counted right, there's 37 in that.
About 37 there. Some of those were music students, too, and
mm-hmm.
some art students. They weren't just elementary education, but most of them were elementary education. But when we came to our commencement, there were loads more people. As I said, they were taking, these were teachers from many, who had been teaching many years, who came back to get their college degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing it in the afternoons and evenings. And so we had a big class when it came to graduating. But we didn't see those people very much.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get to know them very much.
Well, then, you were talking about the certificates?
Earlier than this, you could get a teacher certificate at the end of 2 years
mm-hmm.
and teach school. But by this time, at least in Cleveland, you couldn't start teaching without a degree. I'm not sure how widespread that was. But we just stayed in. They didn't even offer us a certificate at that time at the School of Education.
Mm-hmm. So then you came out with a bachelor's in elementary
Yes,
education.
Bachelor of Science.
Mm-hmm. Okay. While you were doing your training, you had student teaching?
Yes. And we had it the second half of our junior year and the first half of our senior year. We went every morning for a whole semester to a public school in Cleveland. Now, they had at that time just 2 schools designated as training centers. And those teachers had special training, and I think a little bit more salary than other teachers. But they were specially picked teachers to be our training teachers, which I think was a very good idea. And so I was in a second grade class in my junior year. As I said, I went every morning for a whole semester.
Where?
At, school right now. Don't think I can name that school immediately. Oh, Mount Auburn. Mount Auburn School in Cleveland. Yeah. And then the second, in my senior year, I taught in the first grade class. So I was exposed to 2 different levels and 2 different teachers, which
mm-hmm.
I think was very valuable.
Was it the same school?
Yes, I was in the same school because it was easier for me to get to that school than the other school. And then we went back to the campus in the afternoons and took classes, and we met with our supervisor 1 day a week at the campus, and we talked over problems with her and that type of thing. She was one of our regular teachers there in the School of Education who supervised us. We also had Cleveland supervisors coming in to see us and would give us help too, so that we were well supervised. Cleveland had a great many supervisors. They had a supervisor for art and for music, for handwriting, for reading, for math, I think for every subject probably. There was a supervisor, and they
circulated a great deal and visited classes and knew what was going on in the schools. And they were there to help, not just to criticize. So it was a good learning situation.
All right, were they there as specialists?
Yes, they
were. To help the regular teacher?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Did they actually take the class themselves and do teaching?
I never saw that happen. They would observe us and then they'd talk to us, usually. There were occasionally, well, I know that we had curriculum centers in Cleveland, one school where they experimented a great deal with reading curriculum. And they would have observation days set up so that certain teachers were invited to go to that school and see the way the teachers were doing it. But it wasn't the supervisors teaching, it was the regular teachers doing the teaching. But they had had a great deal of help from the supervisor. The supervisor would spend a lot of time in that particular school, and that was how they improved the curriculum in their area. And that was helpful, too, to go and observe.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you did your student teaching, did you just, did you take over the whole class eventually, or did you just teach subjects here and there?
I can't recall specifically. I think I taught most of the morning by the time I was finished. But I don't think I was on my own nearly as much as they seem to want students to be on their own now. There was somebody in and out all the time that was conscious of what was going on in the classroom, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
We were given quite responsibilities for many things, as I recall. I remember putting on quite an elaborate stage play, I think it was, in first grade, and I remember having the children painting scenery, and I was in charge of that. The teacher, I could ask her, but I don't think she made any suggestions, really. And I think the play was pretty much my job, too. So that we did things like that, that were pretty much our responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I felt quite responsible, but I don't think that we handled the whole day, the whole morning, by ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So you never had to go in for a full school day from beginning to end?
No. No, not then.
You never faced that until you were actually in the
That's
classroom
right.
yourself.
Yes.
Okay.
But I thought that we had a lot. The fact that we started right at the beginning of school was important and went through the end. I think that was very important for us to see all the development, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which was better than just having a small segment, which some schools do nowadays, with very small segments.
Okay, so you were in the classroom your freshman year. Were you in your sophomore year?
I think we were assigned to observations, but I don't think we actually taught in our sophomore year. It seems to me we were told to go and observe certain things, and we'd have to make arrangements with the teachers ourselves to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you were in your junior year for a student teaching period,
yes.
And your senior year, so
mm-hmm.
you had quite a bit of classroom experience.
So we did. Mm-hmm.
All right. Then when you started teaching,
yeah.
What do you remember of a typical day?
Well, my days were rather unusual, I think, because, as I said, we were in the midst of the Depression, and we were still feeling the Depression when I graduated in 39. And Cleveland was not hiring any teachers with a contract. I got a job as a permanent substitute without contract, which meant that they could put me into a place that was vacant. There was no teacher assigned there, but they put me in there, and if they needed to move me somewhere else, they could without any difficulty. At that time, they were trying very much to, of course, save money, and they had a certain ratio set up for the school system. There had to be so many children per teacher in each building. And it seems to me it was up in the 40s. It seems like an awfully high figure to me now, but I think it was something like that. And if the ratio fell below that number, they would move a teacher out of that building. Well, the permanent substitutes were the ones that were moved. So I started out, excuse me, they saw that I was had a minor in music. And so they put me into a situation where I taught music all day long, fourth, fifth, and sixth grade music in two different schools. I would move from one school building to the other at noon every day. And
I didn't play the piano well enough to accompany anybody, so this was a real strain on me. I had to lead with my voice. I knew a lot of music. I mean, I had a good understanding of the music literature that was around, so that I could lead. But it still was an awful strain to be singing all day long. And I had fourth, fifth, and sixth grade children, and I had done my student teaching all in primary. I'd done all my work in primary grades. So it was pretty strenuous, but I did get along all right, and I had a good principal. She seemed to appreciate what I was doing. But after, I think, about 6 weeks, they decided either to eliminate the music in that school or something. They needed to eliminate a teacher, and I was eliminated. Then I was moved to a situation. This was something else they had developed. They would keep students who were slow learners in special classes within the school buildings. Like they had a primary room and perhaps an intermediate. They may have been like first and second grade and third and fourth and fifth and sixth. I'm not sure how it worked out. But in the building where I went, I had children who would be doing fifth and sixth grade, should have been doing fifth and sixth grade work. No, I should say they were older than that. I had the feeling that they were kept there till they reached a certain age in elementary school and then were pushed on. I don't think they could have stayed till they were 16, but those children were just pushed out of school at 16. They had to stay in school till they were 16. But I'm not sure how long they stayed in the elementary grades, but till a certain age. Well, I was put into this, what would be like fifth and sixth grade curriculum for these slow learners. And they were all bigger than I, most of them were bigger than I was. And I had no experience with that curriculum at all. I felt really lost. And it was a very difficult situation for discipline, you can imagine. They had no special textbooks. They had no special way of approaching it that I knew. I hadn't been introduced to it at all. I was just thrown into this situation. And it was a very difficult one. They should have been all working on their own levels, but I had no preparation for that at all. So it was really strenuous. Weeks that I was there, and I don't know how long I was there. I was there several months, I think. And then again, I was bumped and went out. And by that time, I think it was probably February or something of that sort before I left that school. I was very unhappy there. I cried in the mornings and my mother would cry with me. She hated the thought that I had to go to school. One interesting thing I remember at that school, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Circus came to the arena, I believe it was called, downtown Cleveland. And they arranged for, I don't know whether the students had to pay anything or not, but practically every student went, I think. And they chartered streetcars to take us down there. Mm-hmm. Before that, I had always gone on chartered buses. When I was a child, we chartered buses to take us to various things downtown. But this was chartered streetcar. And the streetcar just went its own way, and when it got to a place where it would turn, the conductor would get out and switch the tracks so that they could make the turn they needed to and they could get back in. So we were chartered by streetcar down to the arena downtown. Mm-hmm. That was quite an experience. They must have had quite a job routing all the streetcars and parking them and waiting for us to come out again. I don't know how they did all that. Anyhow, that was an interesting experience there. Well, then after that, I think that most of that's the first year was substituting for people who were ill, and some of them were rather long illnesses, but I don't think anymore I was the rest of that year that I was actually not taking somebody else's place. So I had several more experiences in substituting that year. I learned a lot that year, but it was not very easy.
Did you ever, during all this time of being pushed from one situation to another, think that maybe you had chosen the wrong profession?
Yes. I was very unhappy, I can tell you. Also, I got $5 a day for each day that I taught, and nothing for the holidays. Even if they taught around a holiday, I didn't get paid for that holiday. It was just $5 a day straight for those days. But then the second year, I was again a permanent substitute, but I was put into a building where I stayed practically the whole year. And it was a building where they were had a very good principal. She helped me a lot. I was in the second grade, and it was much more to my liking. I enjoyed it. And we did a lot of interesting things that year. Strange thing was that happened. At Memorial Day, I was told that a teacher who had had a leave of absence for illness wanted to come back because she wanted to come to that building specifically, or that area, and she would have first choice. So I was bumped again, and I had taught up through Decoration Day, and so the last like 2 weeks of school I was not in. I had prepared my children for a field day, a big field day that they had, and the principal said, "Would you like to come back and watch the field day?" And I said, "I thought I would," but she said, "I don't think you should be out on the playground. I don't want the children to see you." They didn't want it gotten around in the neighborhood how it had happened that I wasn't there anymore. Mm. So I watched from up in the building, and nobody was supposed to see me. Well, then the grapevine got hold of the fact that I was being released at that time of year, and my dean from the School of Education called me that same weekend and said he had heard about it, and he wanted me to come out and interview some superintendents that were coming in to see him. So I went out immediately to do that, and got a job out in Mentor for the next year right away, which was very nice.
How long were you at Mentor then?
Then I taught at Mentor for 3 years. That situation was, I taught in a three-room schoolhouse, which was out in the country. It was a part of the Mentor Village school system. It was down on the Lakeshore Boulevard. And that was pretty much a resort area where people came for summer cottages. But there was enough of a population there to have a school, too. So we had a first grade room, and then I taught second and third grade in my room. And then we had fourth and fifth in the other room. And the sixth graders went to the big elementary school in the village. So we were very much on our own down there.
What did you have for materials to work with?
Well, we had good materials. It was a well-supplied school. I don't think it lacked anything at all. Yeah, I'd say it compared very favorably in materials with Cleveland. But we didn't have nearly the supervision. In Cleveland, we were so supervised, and you had everything blocked out. You knew what you were doing, this 15 minutes and the next 15 minutes and the next 15 minutes, and it was very structured. Mm-hmm. And you knew that somebody might walk in at any time, and you were supposed to be teaching what your schedule said you were supposed to be teaching at that time, which was a bit nerve-wracking. And of course, you had to have your materials all lined up very well at the beginning of the day, and have it so that you could just move from one thing to another very quickly.
Okay.
Which was good training. I appreciated that.
Then you went on to Pine Mountain Settlement School.
Yes.
In Kentucky.
Uh-huh. Well, I was at Mentor for 3 years and enjoyed it. We were right in the country, and I could do a lot with the children. I was much freer to teach. I didn't like to be boxed into 15-minute periods. I like to be able to pursue things longer, and I was free to do that there. And we had a frog pond right in our backyard, and we could just observe nature so well. We had a brown thrasher that built a nest right outside our window, and we could watch that whole thing. We just had a lovely time. I enjoyed it very, very much out there. But I had gotten to the place where I was feeling by 5 years of teaching, well, I don't want to do this all my life. I wanted to do something else. And we had been very much interested, my family, my sisters and I, in folk dancing and folk music, and we knew Berea College in Kentucky was a outstanding place for those things. Well, my sister and I were thinking we ought to be going on with our education in the summer, but we didn't like the idea of going on toward master's, working on master's program. So we decided to go to Berea one summer and learn to weave. And that was a whole new world, and we enjoyed it thoroughly. We just had a lovely time at Berea College. And we were there for 4 weeks, I think, the first year, and then
6 weeks the second year. And while we were there, we got to know about Pine Mountain Settlement School in Kentucky. Our teacher of weaving had been a girl who went to Pine Mountain Settlement School as a child. And we had a house mother, a dorm mother, taking weaving that summer. And she said, well, why don't you all come down to Pine Mountain and take me back there and visit the school? We were delighted. And one of the teachers came up with a car. And we all went down to Pine Mountain, which was about 100 miles away. It was wonderful. We just enjoyed that visit so much. And we found out so much about the school, which was a basically religious school, but was not a denominational school. And it had many ideas that they were fostering that were not being fostered in denominational schools. For one thing, they wanted to keep up the folk culture as much as they could. And many denominational schools were squelching that folk culture as much as they could. And Pine Mountain had been founded by women who really had a vision of what the Mountain people could do with good education. And the person who donated the land, William Creech, wanted for his grandchildren an education that was worthwhile to help them in life. So the school was really founded on teaching children to work as well as to study. They had their own hospital, and students worked in the hospital and learned a great deal there. Every area of work was supervised, very well supervised. They had their own farm, so boys were working with a herd, a dairy herd, and working in fields and learning a great deal about farming. The students worked in the library. They worked in the kitchen. They did all the cleaning on campus. And it was well supervised so that they learned how to do things well. They worked in the laundry. And it was just seemed to us an ideal kind of a situation. Well, it was a boarding high school, so we weren't qualified to teach there. And we weren't particularly anxious to either. But we got jobs, my younger sister and I got jobs in the office, so I became the bookkeeper and accountant. I handled all the money at the school. And she became the secretary of the school, secretary for the director, and also was in charge of raising funds for the school. So we had some very interesting times there and loved it. When I had sent my application into Pine Mountain, they wrote back to the superintendent of schools and mentor for a recommendation, and he came to see me, and I hadn't talked to him first about it. I suppose I should have, but I thought I'd wait and see whether I'd have a chance to go to Pine Mountain before I'd say anything to him. Well, when I started teaching at Mentor, I should say, the contract said $120 a month for as many months as they required us to teach. Well, it happened to be 9 months, but I suppose they could have cut it down if they wanted to. Also, there was a stipulation in that first contract that this contract was null and void if a single teacher got married, a single woman teacher got married during the time she was on contract. Well, I moved up in the 3 years I was there from $120 a month to $1,580 a year at Mentor. And I was also the principal of that little school the last year I was there. That really was not much more than I was the one responsible in case there was an emergency. And also, I had to send the attendance reports and that kind of stuff up. But there was really nothing much more than that to being principal. I'm not sure I even got anything extra for being principal, any extra monetary consideration. Well, the superintendent came to see me, and he said, why do you want to go there? I said, well, I just thought I wanted that experience. It seemed like such an interesting place. And he said, well, if I raise your salary, would that help? How much are they going to give you there? And I said, $60 a month, plus my room and board, because they took care of all of our living expenses there. But I was getting $60 a month. He looked at me and he said, well, I guess I can't offer you more money to stay here.
Oh, dear.
Well, that wasn't a teaching experience there, but I observed a great deal about teaching, and we had a wonderful experience living there at Pine Mountain for those. I was there for 3 years before I got married. And my sister stayed on for about 13 years.
Mm-hmm. Were you married in Cleveland then?
Yes, went back home to my my home to be married.
Did you live in Cleveland, or did you come to Salem then?
No, my husband was employed at Earlham College in Richmond, Indiana. He was an electrician, and he was on the maintenance staff. They were changing over the electrical system at that time. They had their own generators at the college at that time, and they felt the time had come for them to change over to take the alternating current from the city by the. And so his job was to change everything over from, what do they call it? Anyhow, the other current, not alternating, direct current, and to alternating current. And he enjoyed that very much. So he was working at Earlham at the time we were married, and so our first 3 years were at Earlham. And that particular job was over, and my husband was the kind who liked interesting things to do. He didn't want to just stay on as maintenance. And then at Pine Mountain, they offered him the job of being in charge of the buildings and grounds there. So we went there and were there for 2 years. And he had that job. I was too busy with family by that time to do the job, to do anything besides take care of the household. And that by that time our Dorothy had been born, who was brain damaged near birth sometime. And while we were at Pine Mountain, we realized that she'd need more help. And so we decided we'd better move to another place instead of. We did take her to a osteopath for a while, I think every 2 weeks, for treatments, and she seemed to improve with those. But that was like a, I think it was about 100 miles one way through the mountains to get there, and that was an ordeal. Mm-hmm. And I had a new baby by that time and so forth, and it was really a big job to do, and we decided we'd better come back here to Salem where my husband's family lived, that we could get more convenient medical help than we could down there.
Mm-hmm. Then you went back to teaching then, or?
No, I waited until my youngest child was in first grade before I went back to teaching. So that was not till 1961, I believe, mm-hmm. that I went back to teaching.
Mm-hmm. All right, you've been in teaching for a while. What major changes have you seen, or did you see while you were teaching?
It's hard to tell, I think, because, well, there was quite a change from the Cleveland type of teaching to Salem type of teaching in the first place. But here in Salem, the years I was teaching here, I think we have more, what shall I say, more requirements handed down from the top than we had at the beginning. Now, perhaps in some ways that is better. But in some ways, I felt I could do a better teaching when I was freer to teach as I wanted to teach. Now I know lots of people don't trust teachers to do that. But in first grade, I taught reading nearly the whole day long because reading would come into everything I was teaching. You can present reading concepts in everything you teach, practically everything you teach. And if you're too much structured in a schedule that you have to follow, it's much more difficult to do it that way. And I felt too that there were so many interesting things that children needed to know, just ordinary living type of things that they needed to know, and they weren't getting too well in some of their homes, that I felt you needed to take whatever opportunities you had to teach those things too. And if you're too much structured, you can't take time to do some of the teaching that I felt was very important to teach. Now, I know you have to have a teacher who has some sense of what has to be accomplished and how to accomplish it to have the freedom that I liked. But
You're not talking about total freedom to do what you want when you want.
No, I'm not talking about that.
You're talking about within guidelines.
Yes.
There are certain things to be accomplished, but yet
I didn't
you
like
go
the
about
idea
doing
of
it.
Saying that from 10:10 till 10:20 I'm going to be teaching this particular subject. I like better to be able to be more free and to build my, for instance, my writing program right into my reading program. And take time. I can't say that I'm going to spend only 20 minutes with this group in reading, because I have to give them instruction for how to do their writing or their grammar or something that is in connection with their reading seat work. And to me it was just too hard to say, now this group is going to be here 20 minutes and this group 20 minutes and this group 20 minutes, because they needed their specific reading, that they needed language and they needed spelling and they needed writing all within that same kind of, I had to work with that group with efforts, those specific things also. And it was very difficult for me to say, now everybody's going to have spelling at this time and everybody's going to have writing at this time. Because when I was, for instance, presenting the seat work that I wanted the class to do before we went into our reading classes, I was teaching writing and I was teaching grammar and I was teaching spelling all in that time too. And I feel as though it's a more rounded out program when you don't isolate subjects.
Well, is it actually possible to isolate spelling, grammar, language skills, reading skills? Can you actually cut them down and isolate them and say this is specifically spelling?
We had certain books here these last few years that we were supposed to go through. You were supposed to take your class through that grammar book, and you were supposed to take your, it was a language development mm-hmm. book, and you were supposed to take your class through a spelling book, and you're supposed to take them, you know, through a writing book, through a writing manual. And to me, those were isolated, and they were not, I thought they needed to be joined together. Mm-hmm. You needed to join those skills together.
Do you feel that then possibly that our education system has become too specified or too technical?
I can't say it for the whole. I know what had happened here in Salem, but I can't say what's happened everywhere. I'm thankful that in Salem we never got to the place where we isolated children and said that they had to pursue this course all by themselves, because at least in first grade, I feel they need the stimulus. I think they do in other places too. They need the stimulus of a class. And if you say, now you go through this page and then that page and then that page and that page by yourself, and you know, you accomplish these goals, I feel there's a lot of stimulus lost. I felt that many times children learned a great deal just from discussion. And in math, for instance, at least in the lower grades, they need a lot of playing, games, where they're competing with each other to learn the math skills that they have to learn. And if you sit one child down by himself to learn those math skills, it's just a really dreary affair. Mm-hmm. They don't learn them. Mm-hmm. And I found that when I had classes that were too small, even in reading, they lost out a lot. They didn't have the stimulus of other people contributing. Because in reading, you're not just learning to read, you're learning ideas. And you have to discuss what's going on. And that's where I think a teacher is valuable and a class is valuable. Mm-hmm. So that trend, which I don't know whether they're doing as much as they had been doing, which I had observed in some schools, like I visited in Youngstown and observed some classes where they had stacks of papers and they were just working through papers. And they had various adults around to help them and to check them and so forth to see that they were doing it right. But I felt that there was so little stimulation in that type of a teaching.
Is there anything in specific you would like to see changed?
Mm-hmm. Oh dear, I guess that's difficult to say.
Whether it be teacher preparation or something that you encountered as a teacher?
I felt that some of the teacher preparation was not as adequate as I'd like it to be. I felt many of the students that I'd had in my, when I had student teachers in my class, I felt that they hadn't had enough participation in actual classroom activity before they came to do their student teaching. And then I felt too that they were limited in their experience in student teaching because they were with only one teacher. I felt you should have experience with more than one teacher. teachers teach differently. And I think that it isn't fair for a student to have only one experience. If they can have two, that's so much the better. And if they can have more than that, it's better than yet. And I felt the student teaching time was too limited, too. I felt they should have had a longer time to do their student teaching.
Would you be in favor of the internship that they have discussed in the state of Ohio, where the student comes in and works with a classroom teacher or several classroom teachers throughout a full school year?
It probably would be a good idea. I think that if a person could get the experience with various teachers, I think that's very helpful. And a full school year would be certainly helpful. I felt, too, that perhaps the schools of education did not know their students well enough. There was not close enough relationship between the administration of the school of education and the students, perhaps between the professors, too, that some students came through to student teaching who really should have been eliminated before that, from that program. And I think that comes only through real quite intimate contact with students, which of course would mean a smaller group to work with, probably, that the administration and the, like the dean of the school and the various professors would know what kind of a person that was and whether they could stand the stress of teaching or whether they could carry out what a teacher needs to do.
Well, what do you think of teacher salaries being an influence to attracting people into education? Say, if the salaries were increased, would we attract people that would make better teachers?
That's hard to say, too. To me, the salaries are phenomenal, considering what I started with. I never thought I would earn this much money in a year, by any means. And considering that we have 9 months of teaching, of course, I don't think our salaries are too bad in comparison to some other comparable jobs taking comparable ability. And I think that our benefits are very good, at least in many systems they are, and our retirement benefits are unusual. I've heard that in various places, that we have outstanding benefits in our retirement. Well, I'm always a conservative kind. I guess I don't think that just paying people is the thing that's going to make them good. I don't know what I'd say about that.
Okay. Is there anything else important that you think we have not covered that you would like to talk about? Any experience, idea, course?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. I'm glad that they're allowing married teachers to teach nowadays, because I felt that I was a much better teacher after I was married and had my children than I was before. I felt I understood a great deal more about children, and I could handle emergency situations a lot better than I could before. I don't know what else I might say. I did feel that my education in Cleveland was outstanding. Being on the campus right there at Reserve, I was able to be in and out of the Art Museum a great deal, in and out of Severance Hall, and participated in programs in Severance Hall. And it was a very rich cultural experience to have grown up in Cleveland and go to Western Reserve University at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it hasn't deteriorated too much.
I was just wondering, reflecting back on the Cleveland schools and the situation they've been facing in the last, year,
mm-hmm.
with the teacher strike and talking about closing down, their financial problems. Has this been a great concern to you since you went through those schools?
It is a concern. But I could see how very difficult it would be to teach in some of those situations. People like to blame teachers, but if you have a situation where you can hardly control a class, whether the class is so very difficult to control and the whole building is difficult to control, you can hardly do any good teaching. And I don't think it is just up to a teacher.